My name is Josh Wagner, and you're listening to Discovery. Lorraine Willenberg was diagnosed with HIV in 1992, but noticed that the disease never progressed in her, nor did subsequent lab tests ever detect even a measurable amount of the virus in her system. 3 years later, in 1995, it was determined that she was part of a tiny, unique group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers. Furthermore, she was labeled an elite controller because her HIV remained so suppressed and her infection-fighting cells remained at a healthy level. In 2004, she joined an international study of HIV controllers, and in 2006, a study of long-term non-progressors. Since then, she has made it her life's work to find, support, and rally other LTNPs because this medical phenomenon is so valuable in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Lorraine Willenberg is the founding director of the Zephyr LTNP Foundation, available on the web as zephyrfoundation.org. And now our interview on Discovery, recorded in December of 2010 with Lorraine Willenberg. Lorraine Willenberg, welcome to Discovery.
Thank you, Josh. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about HIV/AIDS and how it works in the body and how it is that it's such a devastating disease for most people.
Well, essentially, Josh, you know, HIV has indeed been the most challenging biomedical item. Essentially, when an individual becomes infected with HIV, otherwise known as the human immunodeficiency virus, the virus acts to actually dismantle our typical immune responses against infection from virus. And therein lies the key of how an individual, say, between 8 and 10 years of infection can no longer fight off this virus or this antigen, this invader. Typically, an individual who's become infected by HIV initially experiences a flu-like illness that can last anywhere from a week to 2 weeks, you know, fevers. It feels like a really intense flu. And I'm speaking from experience with that myself. It's said that at that point, an individual is actually seroconverting, meaning they were HIV negative and then the virus is working and it's multiplying in their body. The human immune system is trying to mount a defense, but, you know, the virus is essentially going crazy inside the body and replicating, otherwise known as multiplying, at real high levels. And should an individual go in for an HIV test at that point of seroconversion, it's very typical to have that test measure viral levels in their body into the millions. It's not always true. There are some individuals who go in and register lower levels of that virus. Take, for example, in 1/5 of a teaspoon of blood, they can actually measure up to 1 million viral particles. And you can see then that it's quite an attack.
Would you say that kind of one causes the other, that the fact that the virus replicates so quickly, therein lies its ability to suppress the immune system of a human being?
Well, yeah, because it actually starts attacking the very cells that are created to help us fight off infection, and those are called CD4 T cells. And over time, then, even though those levels of viral loads, those very high level of virus in the blood, do tend to settle down, the virus is actually starting to work against dismantling the immune system. And that's where that name comes from, immunodeficiency. And unfortunately, I believe that, you know, that wily capacity of the virus has indeed served to challenge our scientific researchers insofar as finding ways to, you know, stop that process from happening. Although we've had obviously very good fortune with the variety of medications that people are now able to access that helps to suppress the virus, to actually not halt it completely, but to actually decrease the amount of the virus that's multiplying in our bodies and dismantling our soldiers and our generals, you know, so to speak, against infection.
On Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Her website is zephyrfoundation.org. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. Could we step back for a moment and take just a brief kind of overview, worldview look at HIV/AIDS? Because it's never far from the news. For example, recently, and I don't remember the statistics or what it's based on, but I heard that by some measurement, the incidence of HIV/AIDS is going down in the world. If we go back to the, say, late 80s, much of the 90s, it was almost like a guaranteed killer, but you hear about antiretroviral medicines being developed that have allowed people to live close to normal lives. So can you give us an overview of the virus?
Sure. Just as a perspective, I want to say that in 30 years since the actual discovery of the agent that causes AIDS, which is HIV, that over 60 million people have become infected. And HIV is responsible for killing 20 million of them. In respect to the recently published numbers about a lower incidence level of infection, I haven't had time to take a look at all the data. I would hope in my heart that it's true that the infection rates are dropping, but I'm not seeing or reading that when I hear about the prevalence rates of infection, say, in the United States in the age group of 15-year-olds to 24-year-olds. It's on the rise. In fact, I just spoke to a friend in India yesterday who actually confirmed that the same kind of statistic is happening in their country, although the ages are a little bit older. He said between 22 to 30, and that's where they're seeing an escalating rate of HIV infection there. So I would hope that it's true. Numbers can be looked at in a variety of ways. Yes, I think that the reduction in the incident rates of HIV infection might be due in part to the great success of the antiretroviral medications. Essentially, Josh, those medications work to suppress the level of virus in the body. And so with 28 of them, 28 medications currently on the market, I do think that since they're initial release in 1996, they were then called the drug cocktails, you might remember, when actually people were starting to not die. It was also called the Lazarus effect. And I think that it's truly remarkable that the medications have had such an outcome and life-saving effect. I would hope that through education and prevention messages in the next 5 to 10 years, that we would definitely be able to say that the infection rates are going down. But I have to look at the numbers a little bit more closely to get a handle on why they're saying that currently today.
I got tired to see my face. Can't get me out of the race. Oh, man,
on Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Her website is zephyrfoundation.org. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. Can you talk a little bit about what it is like for someone who is positive? Obviously, people don't go around with a plus sign on their forehead. But if one is infected, it has a huge impact on one's life. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that impact?
I can. And I'll be speaking from the perspective as a woman who was diagnosed with HIV 18 and a half years ago. I was diagnosed in 1992, which was kind of the, still considered the dark ages. Those of us who are approaching our 20th anniversary, HIV positive anniversary, remember the days, Josh, where many of our friends or friends of friends were dying. They were dying very quickly. We were still 4 years away in 1992 from the release or marketing of the drug cocktails, the precursors to what are now called antiretroviral medications. Obviously, an HIV diagnosis can be very shocking. For some, it's an incredibly traumatic event, because especially for those of us that were diagnosed during the dark ages, because then the general consensus is that, yes, it was a death sentence. There was no cure for HIV infection. There still is no cure. I remember in particular the public health nurse who diagnosed me positive let me know that I should probably tie up my business matters, because most probably I wouldn't be alive within the year. So obviously, to have an individual, especially a health professional, deliver that kind of message to you, I felt like the world had imploded. But I also felt, and I told this nurse I said, well, gosh, I survived cancer, 12 years before, and I felt that she needed to know that I wouldn't go down without a fight. And I think after the initial shock wore off, and this probably took about a month, is when I accessed a very important service based out of San Francisco called the HIV Hotline. And the HIV Hotline was sponsored by Project Inform, an organization that was totally dedicated to the education and support of especially newly diagnosed people. And Josh, I have to tell you, I probably wore out a phone, those first 2, 3, 4 months. making calls to these people, these wonderful people who oriented me not only to my physician here in Sacramento, but also suggested books. Remember, you know, 1992, we didn't have email, the internet wasn't, you know, so ever present in our lives as it is today. And so I did. I started to go to the library. I started to buy books on HIV and AIDS. And I really relied on those wonderful voices over the phone to help keep my brains in, because I did feel that my life had taken an incredible turn. And I did realize that I needed to commit to living, you see, to not subscribing to that belief system of the nurse that I was supposed to die from this infection. I'm not going to tell you that I wasn't scared out of my wits, because I was. And I made my world very small, you know, for many months.
Feeling into one drop.
On Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992, and in 1995 was determined to be part of a unique group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers. In the next segment, Laureen uses some scientific terms, which I'll explain. CD4 T cells are a type of white blood cell that, along with other cells in our blood, helps to fight infection. A higher CD4 count indicates wellness, a lower count means the HIV is essentially winning. When she refers to copies per milliliter of the virus, she means essentially units of HIV. Obviously, lower is better. Likewise, viral load refers to the presence of HIV in the system, and again, lower is better. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. Well, that gets us into, again, as I referred to, the gist of what we want to talk about today, and that is, to me, something phenomenal and, to me, new. Obviously, it's not new, but it's something I've learned about recently, and that is something called a someone who is infected with the virus, but they're called non-progressors or controllers and so forth. And so... You are that, and tell me about the history of your learning about that, and tell us, of course, what that is.
Well, it's such a remarkable story, because when I did finally connect with this physician, a Stanford-trained physician in Sacramento, he is actually the person who first introduced me to the term long-term non-progressor. And this was about 1995. Actually, I had been accessing my medical care very frequently those first 3 years, and, you know, doing my normal lab tests. You know, it was very important to him, to especially that first year, to have me come down from the foothills to his office and run my labs like once every quarter to create what he called a baseline. And for a gal who had hardly ever been sick in her life, nothing major, you know, having to pull labs every quarter oriented me to the seriousness of this infection. But if we fast forward 3 years, my doctor started talking to me about those lab results, and he started to say, you know, Lorena, you have some really odd lab results, and I've started to read then, he said, about a study that the National Institutes of Health had endeavored that year in 1995, and he said, I think that they're starting to recognize and to study people like you, and let's stay in touch about that. And really all I remember, Josh, about that time was, long-term non-progressor, what the heck does that mean? And that's really what started my interest in their AIDS speak, a little bit of biomedical terminology. I didn't have a frame of reference about clinical studies, you know. I remember thinking, driving away from his office that day, what's a study? You know, what's a research study? And so I do recall him saying, Lorene, I have no doubt in the future you're going to be one of those people that they want to look at. So, you know, I had talked to my doctor about whether he thought I would need to be on the medications like the following year. I remember having extremely long, in-depth conversations with my physician about the question. I'd ask him, what do they know about women, HIV-positive women? What is the effect of the drugs on us? Will they save lives? Will they make us sick? You know, all this stuff. It was just almost overwhelming, you know, all this new information. But he gave me a kernel of hope, because by tracking my lab results, he pretty much said, you're not following the normal trail of disease progression. That's really when I started to understand what this term meant, long-term non-progression. But at that point, I'd only been infected about 3 years. The early science indicated that individuals in that category probably had to achieve 10 years survival, you know, to be considered a long-term non-progressor. And so I kind of just was in this state of suspension for quite a while before I found a study to join. And that takes us about 12 years ahead, you know, to 2004.
But before we go to that, just by way of, just to support what you're saying or give a little bit of additional information, HIV's strength, or one of its strengths, is in its ability to replicate at an incredible rate.
Yes.
Basically, you were being told that for one reason or another, and they probably didn't know why, the virus in you was not replicating, it was remaining constant, or is that the idea?
Right. Well, see, this is the other timely thing to know, is that from 1992, when I was diagnosed, to, say, 1995, 3 years into this infection, they were totally focused on, and when I say they, I'm talking about the Centers for Disease Control and physicians, you know, medical providers. All of them were focused on the CD4 count, you know, those infection-fighting cells that I mentioned earlier. The infection fighters, the generals in the fight against infection by viruses. And so the CD4 count, you know, you almost became, for those of us who were newly diagnosed, Josh, the numbers were very important when you get your lab results. You couldn't wait for your doctor to call you back and tell you, you know, what was my CD4 count. Human normal CD4 counts are usually considered, say, 500 to 1200. The definition of an AIDS diagnosis from the Centers for Disease Control during these early 90s was 200. In fact, if you reached a level of only 200 CD4 cells in your infection, you were considered to have AIDS, meaning that HIV had dismantled your immune system enough that, you know, you were going to start falling prey to opportunistic infections. Pneumocystis pneumonia was killing people left and right. They just could not keep up with how this virus absolutely devastated our immune system and other opportunistic infections. And so all of us then were focused all the time on our CD4 counts. Mine, from the very first time my doctor ever took my blood for a lab test, they registered 1,800 CD4s. So if you're looking at the norm, 500 to 1200, you know, obviously there was something different with my CD4 count. And then it changed a little in 1996, Josh, because what happened was the viral load test was created and it started to be marketed. And essentially these assays, these viral load tests, as they're called, were able to measure the number of viral particles within that one-fifth, that milliliter, that one-fifth teaspoon of blood, say. And the very first viral load test that my doctor ran on me showed me as undetectable.
Hmm.
In other words, the assays could measure to, say, 50 down to 50 copies per milliliter of blood, and I always registered less than 50.
Hmm.
Less than 50. When a person at 3 years diagnosed or 4 years diagnosed, by the time these assays were marketed and starting to be used by the medical professionals to track the progression of HIV infection in their patients, it just wasn't registering. In other words, they couldn't really say that I had a viral load at all.
Hmm.
And to this day, I have never registered a viral load. Not one. Not, in fact, 2 years ago at the National Institutes of Health, they put in place in their labs a brand new assay machine, and this is remarkable, that can actually copy down to 0.25 copy of the virus in that milliliter of blood. And I remember getting the call from that clinical researcher, Dr. Stephen Magellis, after I'd returned home from Bethesda, Maryland. And he said, "Loreen, we finally found the virus in you." And I said, "Really?" He said, "We found half a copy."
And half a copy means?
Half a copy means, and I asked him, I said, "Where'd the other half go?" But it means it's so low. I have the virus is so well suppressed by my immune system that they can barely measure it.
Hmm.
Yes. Hmm. And there are very, very few of me who are involved in that particular protocol, the long-term non-progressor protocol at the NIH, who register below one copy of the virus.
Mm.
Yes, it's very, it's extraordinary.
So you have a special status amongst long-term non-progressors.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And part of the work that I've been trying to do that you're very familiar with over the last 5 or 6 years is to try to explain to the general public the variety of terms that we are now known by. The scientists, depending on the institution, say Harvard or Massachusetts General, the partners, AIDS Research Group, for example, who has convened the largest cohort of participants of HIV controllers. That study is spearheaded by Dr. Bruce Walker from Harvard. He's an amazing gentleman and a world-renowned immunologist and one of the few individuals, medical professionals, Josh, who back in the late 90s started to ask his peers, his colleagues at a variety of scientific conferences, how many of those physicians in his audience had patients like myself. And he was just so stunned to see so many hands go up in the audience. And that kind of led him to formalize a study that's since been known as the International HIV Controller Study. His team uses two separate terms for HIV controllers. One that's becoming more known as more about us is becoming known, how we control this virus naturally without the assistance of antiretroviral medications, is elite controllers. And we elite controllers, and don't ask me why they picked the name elite. It's, I guess, in their arena, it infers, you know, an extraordinarily rare suppression, an elite suppression of the virus like they've never seen before when they compare us to individuals who progress to infection and to disease. The elite controller group are individuals like myself who never have registered a viral load and maintain quasi-higher CD4 counts. we are estimated to represent less than 0.5% of the total global infected population. As of the last demographic that they provided for me, and this was just last week, they have only identified 513 elite controllers in the world.
Hmm.
Then in that same study in Boston, the International HIV Controller Study, the second tier of controller is called viremic controller. They are definitely controlling or suppressing the virus. However, these individuals register a viral load up to, say, 2,000 copies per ml. But they reach that zenith, and they never surpass it. And so there's something going on with the viremic controller group that qualifies them as a controller, but they're measuring, they're registering what we're calling blips. So, wow, you know, it's like, what is happening here? I mean, there's 0.5% of us who never register a viral load. There's some that do. The LTNPs are estimated to represent 5% of the total global population, HIV-infected population. So it's really quite astonishing. They're peeling back the onion layers bit by bit. It's been very interesting for me to become involved, very deeply involved in tracking the science and talking to these scientists that are looking at our group. And it's quite amazing what they're uncovering about our secrets.
On Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Her website is zephyrfoundation.org. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. So, before we go into the significance that this phenomenon has in terms of controlling or perhaps one day curing HIV/AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
What's known about, how does this happen?
That's the golden question. I mean, why do some of us, you know, hold the virus at bay, and why do others of us absolutely lose their battle with this virus? In thinking about this very unique subgroup, we HIV controllers, we're very informative to the scientists in terms of these individuals, without a doubt, are showing us that durable control of this antigen, this virus, is possible. Josh, there are, and I have corresponded with, seven individuals, HIV controllers, and long-term non-progressors who are entering their third decade of being HIV positive without any illness, without assistance from antiretroviral medications. They're living their lives. It's quite remarkable. But I think what they're finding is, and now there's even a new term, relatively new term, that's being used for us in respect to the future of HIV as we know it. They are saying that we HIV controllers represent what's called a functional cure for HIV infection. If I may, I'd like to quote Dr. Stephen Deeks from an interview he gave on his own University of California at San Francisco website, HIVinsight.org, and this was from a couple of years ago. He said that the functional cure term is broadly defined as achievement of long-term control of HIV replication, similar to what is seen in elite controllers in the absence of antiretroviral therapy. So is there a way then, and this is my great hope, this is one of the reasons why I've donated my blood and my cells and my tissues for a solid 6 years to 12 different scientific clinical research studies. Wouldn't it be fantastic if in the remarkability of the scientists' minds and everything they have at their fingertips to try and answer this question is how, if they can figure out our mechanisms of control, wouldn't it be a miracle then to assimilate that and share it with those individuals, those 40 million other HIV-infected individuals in the world, to help them not have to look at a lifetime of potentially toxic medications? This is my great hope, and I have to tell you that there are pilot studies happening at the National Institutes of Health today that are looking at the possibility of cell transfers between an elite controller to an individual who is called a progressor, someone who's losing their battle against HIV infection. And they're looking at one particular safety study that would take, for example, myself, who tests positive for a couple of protective genes and actually transfuse the other individual with my cells and see if perhaps that doesn't inhibit the replication of the virus in their body. Thus saving their lives. And, you know, that'll take us into a discussion, I think, next of these protective genes, findings of which have recently been published that went around the world like in 2 days. It's extraordinary.
On Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Her website is zephyrfoundation.org. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. I was going to ask about genetic markers, yes. So, So yes, go ahead.
Well, what the group, Bruce Walker's team did very, very incredibly four years ago in 2006 was to start cooperating with MIT and also the Human Genome Project. I believe that it was Dr. Eric Landers that they started cooperating with. And what they wanted to do, Josh, is they wanted to take 1,000 HIV controllers and they wanted to do genetic typing for all 1,000 of us. And they did that. And I think they wound up with something like, 600,000 possibilities. And with the assistance of MIT and the Human Genome Project, they started to focus on commonalities between we 1,000 participants to discern then, are there particular genes that are serving to protect these individuals from, you know, progression to disease? And in fact, this is not a new question. Geneticists from around the world have been asking this question for a long time, a decade at least. But I almost think that it's taken the advancement of certain machines and computer technologies and, I mean, my gosh, we're finally able, for example, to see how an amino acid, a portion, you know, a very important and integral part of one of these protective genes or alleles, another word they're known by, how it looks, how it actually sits in a particular groove in our cellular makeup. And we couldn't have seen those images, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, I think that the explosion of technology is quite amazing and has helped us then to look at the actual virus itself and its interactivity with our immune system. So I think it's remarkable that science has reached a level that they can actually attribute protective capability to certain genes that some of us have. But some of these protective genes are also associated with autoimmune problems. And so they want to kind of pick and pull the six or seven genes apart. They want to know more about them. It's going to take extreme intense study. It's going to take lots of money to continue the study. But you know what? It's very hopeful because I think eventually, Josh, maybe in the next 10, 15 years, if we're lucky, in my layperson opinion, I don't have a biomedical background. I'm just a gal who's, you know, very interested in how are they going to help 40 million other people who don't have this fortunate status of suppression, natural suppression of HIV like I do. I believe that what we're talking about is taking this information about the protective genes, about the robust immune responses that HIV controllers exhibit, kind of rolling them all in together and hopefully creating some immunotherapy, some immune design, if you will, to actually synthesize these protective orientations in us to another product or perhaps a therapeutic vaccine in combination with antiretroviral medications for individuals who are already infected and thus, you know, giving people options for certain therapies. This is where I think we are. I think that we're involved in an amazing renaissance of research. I actually heard the word cure uttered at the International AIDS Conference in Vienna this past summer, and people are actually conducting studies aimed at the cure, aimed at a sterilizing cure. I mean, in 18 years being positive, Josh, I haven't heard the word cure probably 15 years. 15 years ago, I did. Hmm. And now we're hearing it again. And I think that it's truly a renaissance of research, and it's quite remarkable. HIV has challenged our clinical researchers like no other biomedical whore that we've ever known.
Hmm. Hmm. If I'm an elite controller, or one way or another, my system is very successful at suppressing the virus. Does that lower the chances of me communicating it to someone else?
Actually, that's what they've finally come out and said, these researchers. And in the genetic paper that Dr. Walker's team published on November 4th, right in the introductory paragraph, they do say, and I'll quote, "Such individuals referred to as HIV controllers typically maintain stable CD4 plus T cell counts, do not develop clinical disease, and are less likely to transmit HIV to others. From my personal experience, Josh, even though we have some of the most heralded, distinguished clinical researchers such as Dr. Stephen Deeks and Dr. Bruce Walker, making a statement like that and actually citing a paper from, I think it was 2002, is that I could never live with myself if I ever transmitted this virus to another human being. That was a decision that I made in 1992. I could not live with myself, even though from a scientific perspective, these individuals, these researchers are saying that because elite controllers especially suppress HIV to near unmeasurable levels, and I've actually been told myself that the NIH could only find half a copy of the virus in my blood, that I would never presume that I was not infectious, meaning that if I were involved in a relationship with an individual that I cared a great deal for, whom I loved, that I would always practice safe sex practices. In other words, I would always insist on the use of a condom. There is still so much that we do not know about this virus. And although extreme advances have been made, key advances due in part to the study of HIV controllers around the world now. These studies happen in Germany, in Spain, in Paris, in the UK, Russia, Belgium, Denmark, Norway. You know, HIV controller studies are happening everywhere. There is still always that potential that if an individual like myself, even though I'm registering 0.5 of a copy of that virus, if I elected to have unprotected sex with someone, wouldn't it just be horrible if in a month, 3 months, 6 months, that my fiancé, that my husband, that my lover went for the HIV test and turned up HIV positive? I just could not live with myself if that should happen.
On Discovery, you're listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Her website is zephyrfoundation.org. And now, back to our interview with Laureen Willenberg. I don't know if I can refer to, you know, use the term community, but referring to the community, as it were, of those who are HIV positive, is there an awareness of long-term non-progressors? And if so, is there a sense that these people are infected, but they're different?
Yes. I have watched for 5 years as more of the HIV community has become aware. It's interesting, Josh. I think I'm the only controller today that can say that I've spoken with close to 10% of the 1,700 controllers involved in Dr. Bruce Walker's study in Boston. I started reaching out on international forums, you know, 5-6 years ago, asking, are you one of me? Where are you? I need to connect with you. And to date, I've, you know, corresponded or met or spoken with almost 150 of these individuals. the stories that I hear from, unfortunately, a large majority of them is that they're ostracized, actually, by the HIV community for their non-progression, for their status as a controller. I think it's very sad. We kind of straddle a fence. In fact, in 2006, I composed a little article called Partially Positive. I was so astonished at what I was hearing from Dr. Walker. His was the first study I ever joined in 2004. This Partially Positive, I wasn't using it as a way to say, hey, look at me, I'm special. I was using it to say that some of us are not like you, but does not mean that we are not you. There's been very little support groups, you know, formal support groups oriented for HIV controllers. Dr. Walker's partner, Dr. Florencia Paeira, created actually a formal support group for some of her initial participants of the study back in 2002. And unfortunately, stories were told within that group that have been published actually through articles in PAWS magazine that these HIV controllers felt isolated, they felt alienated, and they felt shut down by members of the general HIV community. I think that's improving the more of us that speak out. I was not the first HIV controller to go public in 2006. Dr. Walker invited me to join him at the International AIDS Conference in Toronto, Canada. He was actually going to announce his search effort, his massive international search effort to find more of we HIV controllers. In 2006, there were only about 75 of us who they'd found and enrolled in his study. And after that press conference with the world press, I'm so happy to say within a year they'd found 300 of us, and then the next year it like quadrupled, and it was really a remarkable affair. But it's taken a while for people to get oriented, and I'm talking about HIV-negative individuals and HIV-positive individuals, to get more oriented to what these scientists are talking about when they say long-term non-progressor or HIV controller. And I must say that in my correspondence with my community, we are all altruistically motivated, and only that. There's only maybe been one pill in the bunch that I have run across who wanted to use it as a platform for fame, for example. A lot of us don't go public, Josh, because we are still talking about a highly stigmatized disease. HIV is still discriminated against. There's lots of stories about the criminalization of HIV-positive individuals. And I believe my internal records show that there's only been about 20 of us who have gone public about our status, both as an HIV-positive individual and then secondarily as an elite controller or HIV controller or LTNP. Only 20 of us.
Hmm.
So when you compare that to Bruce Walker's, you know, cohort of 1,725 HIV controllers, 20 individuals to go public is not like we're waving a banner and talking about how special we are. When I speak in public, and I recently provided an address, I was an invited speaker to a two-day conference for HIV community members in Toronto. I ended my 90-minute address letting people know that we, as a collective, are totally focused on how we can help. We feel obligated to help. We are absolutely dedicated to helping the scientists discover how this kind of amazing capability can be shared with those individuals who aren't protected by gene structure, who don't have incredible and robust immune response, you know, against HIV. And I've made some really excellent friendships with controllers these past 5 years, and they're very special individuals. I can't say enough about them. We're hoping that folks realize that we're in it for them. We know we're different, but we're also very much the same. We've dealt with stigma. Some of us never disclosed our status to our families. I was stunned, for example, by a phone call from an elite controller from Brazil, of all places. This was about 2 summers ago, and he had read an interview with me done by PAWS magazine and posted on their website, PAWS.com, and he said he was so relieved to know that he wasn't the only one that he had to call me, and I'm the only human being that this gentleman, after 22 years of being HIV infected, he hasn't even told his parents. And what an honor it was for this individual to disclose his status to me. And he actually broke down in tears during our call. I have many stories like that, Josh. It's a very hard place to be. But we pull ourselves up and out of the more negative aspects of being HIV positive by our contributions to these many clinical research studies around the world. And I guess that's my message to your listeners, is that we're very concerned and we're hopeful that we are contributing to unlocking the mystery of AIDS.
On Discovery, you've been listening to Laureen Willenberg. Laureen was diagnosed with HIV in 1992 and in 1995 was determined to be part of a minuscule group of positive people known as long-term non-progressors, LTNPs, or HIV controllers, whose systems effectively suppress the virus to sometimes undetectable levels. Since 2004, she has made it her life's work to find and support other LTNPs because of their value in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Laureen Willenberg is the founding director of the Zephyr LTNP Foundation, available on the web as zephyrfoundation.org.
Forward in this generation, triumph.
And for Discovery, I'm Josh Wagner. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I wish you all Godspeed.
His songs of freedom, won't you hear to sing? Sweet songs of freedom, redemption song. Emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a portal.